I think the best strategy is to recognize, again, recognize it for what it is, its bias, and understand that there are strategies, and I lay a lot of them out in the book. There's strategies to maneuver around, over some of these barriers, and you can still have a successful career. To have a career that you really enjoy, you do have to address the bias though, right? And in the book, I give you the way to understand what some of these biases are and how they show up, and then I give you the language to address them.
You are listening to the Culture Coach Podcast. This is the place where CEOs and people-first leaders come to boost productivity, extinguish burnout, and cultivate a vibrant culture that reflects a fully integrated mission, vision, and core values. Get ready to take your culture to the next level. I am your host, Wendy Brand. Welcome back to the Culture Coach Podcast. I am your host, Wendy Brand, and whew, it has been such a day. So at the time of this recording, it's Tuesday, and I've already recorded this episode, but today I wrapped up my webinar series, a three-part series where we talked about getting clarity as a leader and for your organization. We talked about your energy, how to protect that, manage it, and use it for its greater good. And then this last session today, leaders selected their top three priorities for how they want to create intentional culture in 2026. Really great conversation. If you would like the replays, I am making them available until December 12th of 2025. And you can go to culturecoachwendy.com/webinar series and download each of the replays from all three sessions and each of the workbooks to follow along. Each session was about an hour. So take a look at the clarity, the energy, or the roadmap session and get started on creating an intentional culture. Okay, I'm excited about my episode today with my guest, Kay Williams. Now, she is a seasoned tech executive and the author of Not Made for You Now. And it's a book that pulls back the curtain on the subtle and not so subtle barriers that women and marginalized leaders face every day in the workplace. Kay spent decades navigating male-dominated rooms, board meetings, startups, and scale-ups, and she's distilled her experiences and her strategies into a framework that helps women advocate for themselves without losing their voice, value, and ambition. Now, if you are one of my beloved male audience members, I hope you'll give this episode a listen and take from it what you'd like. These experiences aren't exclusive to women, and my hope is that they'll happen less in the decades to come. So if you're a CEO, an HR leader, or anyone who wants to create a more equitable, conscious, and human workplace, this episode is going to challenge you, equip you, and give you hope. Let's dive in. All right. Welcome back to the Culture Coach Podcast. I am so excited to have Kay with me. Kay, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Wendy. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Me too. And I just want to dig right in. You've had a long career in tech, and we've seen that industry evolve over decades. So what inspired you to write Not Made for You Now?
I've been in tech for a long time, and I've worked in different size companies, large companies, startups, and scale up companies. And I noticed that I've been thinking about this topic for a while because I noticed this pattern of behavior that I was experiencing other women and marginalized people. And it didn't matter. It wasn't just the culture in one company. I was seeing the pattern multiple times, and it was causing barriers to your career. And so I, you know, again, I've been thinking about it for a long time, figuring out how do I talk about this? I mentor a lot of people. And I noticed when, because I started practicing some strategies for myself in these rooms to get around these barriers to, you know, have a successful career. And I started offering that advice to people that I mentor. And I noticed that they would feel relief when I told them how I thought they should handle a situation. So they went from, oh, you know, I need to leave this company or this industry or this department to, oh, okay, I think I can do that. I think I can handle that. And so that gave me hope that, you know, the strategies that I've been employing will work for other people. And then honestly, I was in a board meeting and one of my colleagues was being spoken over quite a lot in the meeting. And in a board meeting, you know, there's the CEO, there's the chairman of the board, there's, you know, if it's a PE firm or VC firm, and we prepare a lot for these meetings and you're getting asked a lot of questions. And so she was very intelligent woman and explaining things, but being spoken over and people explaining what she had just explained. And I was really frustrated. I could tell she was frustrated. And after the meeting, she came up to me and said, what am I doing wrong? Why are people always talking over me? Because they really took control over her presentation. And I started to give that canned answer of, well, you need to be more assertive. And in my head, I started to say that. And I said, wait a minute, you didn't do anything wrong. This is not you, right? It's what's happening in those rooms. And so that day, I actually went back to my hotel room and wrote the outline for the book.
Mm.
That was, you know, that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, for me. That was that I had seen enough that I knew we need to start having these conversations to build awareness for the strategies that women can take, and, you know, othered people, and for the people who are running these systems, men, to understand that our experience at work is very different than theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And so to bring awareness to them as well.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that just gave me chills because I'm sure, I mean, any woman that's listening, that's been in a leadership role or not even in a leadership role, especially probably has experienced what you're explaining. Can you tell me, are there other challenges besides kind of that example that you've given that you talk about, that you help women overcome?
I think one of the things that we start our careers off with a lot of hope, a lot of ambition, get out of school, high school, college, and we have these aspirations. And although we recognize that it may be a little difficult because of our gender or our race, we don't recognize how often it happens and how subtly it can happen. So there's a lot going on in these rooms where you're being spoken over, where somebody immediately gets credibility. And as a woman, you don't, you have to earn that credibility. Somebody, you know, you say an idea, you get a little bit of a, and then there's a man that says the same idea and boy, that takes off, right? So a lot of those things are happening aside from, you know, there's microaggressions that happen constantly. There is sexual harassment. There is racism. There is ageism. All those things are happening, but there's a lot of things happening on a daily basis that are very subtle. We don't always recognize them for what they are or how much it actually devalues us in a room. And that affects our career growth.
Mm-hmm. You share the story of Susan Fowler's experience at Uber. Why was it important for you to include that case? And what should leaders take away from it about protecting culture?
Susan Fowler's unfortunate experience had elements of the things that we were exploring in the book.
Right? And share her experience for us, for those that don't know what it was.
Sure. So Susan Fowler was in the engineering department. She, I think her first day, and I want to make sure I get this right. Somebody in the company, I think it might've been her manager, if I recall, sent her a note about, you know, a note about looking for open relationships, even though I believe he was married. Right. So, she went to HR. They didn't really do anything because they said he was valued more than her. Right. That was the reason behind it. She started to hear that this person was doing it to other engineers. They all went to HR, and nothing happened. She ended up, they actually HR told her that the other women said nothing happened, even though she knows they didn't say that. She ended up leaving the company. She was getting harassed by people saying that, you know, she wrote this blog post. She was being harassed, saying that she didn't, you know, in fact, nothing happened, and that she was told to write this blog post for, you know, influence, et cetera. And then eventually what did happen was there was an investigation, and the CEO stepped down. But she went through a lot within that time, and it just wasn't, she wasn't credible. Right. They didn't, or she was credible. They didn't consider her credible because they valued this other person more in the company than they did her. And so a lot of elements of that story, of her story, are what I talk about in the book. There's just gender discrimination. There is the support of a violator because they are seen to have more value in a company. There's cases where it's the salesperson and they're bringing in a lot of revenue, so they may get their hand slapped, but or nothing. So there's that. There's the retaliation when you do speak out, being discredited when you speak out. So there's so many elements of that story that resonated for what I was trying to build in the book.
Yeah, and you also describe in your own early career experience being valued for appearance over intellect, or being told to smile more. How did those moments affect your confidence? And what advice would you give women facing that? Were you told that you need to smile more?
Oh, I was.
I was too.
Yes.
That resonated so much when I read that about you. I had asked my leader, we had a new leader in the organization and that I was going to be reporting to, and I could tell something was off. Like, we weren't clicking. And I had been a high performer in the organization, and I went to her and I said, what feedback can you give me? What, you know, help me, you know? And she was like, I can't think of anything except you just need to smile more. Are you kidding me?
It's shocking when that happens. I was earlier on in my career. I was a manager at a very young age, and I had this amazing boss who was trying to help me grow. He was giving me the support I needed, and he recommended that I had a mentor. And so the mentor was the VP of HR. And so I was meeting with him, and after one meeting, you know, I had to present to the executive staff, and it was a new CEO. And, you know, it was the first time I had ever been in one of those rooms, and it was a fairly large company. And so I did my presentation. I thought I did a great job, came back, and he met with me after, this head of HR. And he said, oh, you lied in the meeting when you answered this. And I, you know, I said, no, I didn't lie. Why would I lie about that? And he said, yes, you did. And he didn't believe me. And we kind of went back and forth. And then he said, you know what you need to do? You need to smile more. That was his advice out of this presentation, which was just, he lost his credibility with me just from that. Right. Point, right?
Yeah.
And so when those things happened, and that did happen a lot, I was given a Barbie Award as an executive in an executive offsite. One time we were getting awards, and mine was the Barbie Award.
Wow.
And from the CEO. And, you know, when I went back to sit down, some of the other execs were like, I'm so sorry. And so when it was happening when I was younger, it didn't really shake my confidence about my capability, because I knew I was capable. I understood it for what it was, but it's shocking and dismaying to recognize that they're looking at you for your looks and your sexuality versus your intellect. So that was, you know, discouraging for me, for sure. But it didn't really rock my confidence about my capability. And then for women, other women, I would say recognize the bias for what it is. It's not you, it's their bias. And you should address it, certainly, when it happens, but then stay focused on your work and your worth.
Yeah, I love that guidance. Because, you know, when I reflected, it wasn't the first time someone had said that to me, to smile more. And what I realized, I ended up leaving that company because of that leader. And that's when I started my own company. I was like, I don't have to do this.
Right.
I don't have to put up with this.
Yeah.
But there's so, and that was 3 years ago, and I've had a lot of reflection. And one of the things I believe, you know, I am a very positive person. I do smile a lot, but I think I was so conditioned in a men's, I worked in sports, I worked in tech, in a male dominated, really, I mean, honestly, most of corporate America was male dominated when I was coming out of college and entering the workforce.
It still is. Yes.
Right. And so I didn't see men smiling a lot. I didn't, you know, and so I think we, or at least I can speak from my own experience, tried to mirror the way that they were behaving because I saw them succeeding. I even learned how to play golf because I felt like that's how I was going to get to, you know, have those meaty conversations about the business. Yes. So I think for someone, it is very gender biased, I think, to tell someone to smile, because you wouldn't tell a man that he needs to smile more, right?
No. And you, a couple of things that you said, I've heard so many women, and even for me, learning to golf, because we knew that's where some of the business or the influence was, and we weren't getting invited to that necessarily.
Right.
And yes, being told to smile, there's been so many women that I've spoken to that have been told that, because we're viewed as, unfortunately, we're viewed as this kind of desirable sexual object when, you know, when we're young.
Right.
And then we're viewed as not valuable as we age, right? It's never about our capability, or isn't always. I mean, and I'm not saying like all men do that, right?
Right. But,
And I think it was more prominent way back.
Yes.
Some of that, right? That was really prevalent in, especially in tech years and years ago. I think that people are being more aware and smarter about what they say. But there's still bias, gender bias in what leadership, good leadership looks like, right?
Yeah. I love that. So if they're for the men, the male leaders listening, don't tell your female counterparts to smile more. Or if there are women listening, please don't.
Because yours was a woman, right?
Right. That yes. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things that I talk about and the frameworks that I work with my the clients that I have is intentional culture. So I think there is a difference between, you know, I mean, there is such a thing as having a good culture, but I think it's also having an intentional culture. To drive the values, every organization is different, right? And so I'm curious, in your experience, have you seen where organizations have done a really good job about being intentional about their culture?
I've seen some glimpses of it. So
okay.
Let's, you know, what I consider intentional, a good intentional culture is one where you're asking the hard questions, right? We talk about DEI and all of those things right now, where the leaders are asking hard questions, even when they're uncomfortable, and they're addressing those issues. So they're looking at who has influence, who's getting hired, right? Who's being spoken over in rooms, and they're addressing those issues. It's not just about this slogan or this statement or this one metric about how many, you know, people of color you have, for example, in the company. And it's happens, the accountability for that and the action is at all levels. And it's really around when the employees start to feel that change, right? They feel safe in speaking up. They feel that they have a path, a growth path. They notice that people, that there's diversity at all levels and accountability for action at all levels, because a culture is created by the day-to-day behavior, not by policy. And so I've seen glimpses of that in my current company. They're very respectful. I came in with immediate credibility, and it was a bit shocking, frankly, because it's a male-dominated space. My last company gave me a lot of hope. There were originally were three females on the executive team and three males. And then we went to four females and three males. It was the first time in my career where I wasn't typically the only executive, female executive wow. in the room. And I noticed that the bias starts to diminish when you have that many women in the room because they can't ignore four women. Mm-hmm. It's easier to ignore one, but not four. And as they start to work with us, they understood our value and our expertise and leadership in the departments that we were running. And it was a fantastic experience for all of us. We still keep in touch. We all know that that was an amazing experience. That to me is an intentional environment.
Yes. So true. I love that. And you even write in your book that the standard of corporate culture was shaped by white men. So tell me what you mean by that. And then how do leaders begin to reimagine a culture so it is intentional and inclusive?
What I mean by that is, you know, if you think about way back in time, like who was working, mostly men, and the system was built on this one dominant perspective, which was a male perspective. So what does leadership look like? How we lead, how we communicate, how we show up at work. Well, then it never shifted to include women coming into the workforce or, you know, other races coming in. So this more diverse groups of people coming into the workforce, it has not changed, right? And so it's still, all of those things that I talked about, leading and communication, is through this very narrow view and this narrow foundation. And that's what I mean when it's a system that was built by men for men and not for women and people who are othered. And I think what we just talked about is, how do you intentionally do that? And again, it's asking those hard questions, looking at the organization, who is the influencer, who is the one being spoken over, who's the one getting these special projects, right? Who's being supported, and making change around those things and redefining what leadership, accountability, how we communicate, redefining all of that. So it's not that narrow view that it has always been.
Do you think that it takes a certain type of leader to lead that way? Because I believe that, you know, culture is, it's what, how everyone's behaving, but it is the leader at the top that has to set the example. And if that's not there, you know, I think it's more difficult to make that shift in an organization. Do you agree? Or
I absolutely agree with that. It starts, you know, we always say that it starts at the top, and it does. Yeah. Not that you can't lead, things can change from the bottom up.
Yeah.
Because I think if you look at environments now, a lot of employees are not tolerating these.
Right.
Right. So it can lead from the bottom up, but the majority of that tone gets set by that leader, and you need a leader who is aware of their bias. They're willing and comfortable making those changes. They're more circumspect than some of the other leaders.
Yeah. It's that awareness piece.
Yes.
So you mentioned DEI efforts earlier, and in your book, you talk about virtue signaling. Tell me what that means.
So virtue signaling is what we've seen, you know, with DEI, it unfortunately became very performative, right? It was a statement that we are going to, you know, have diversity, we're equal opportunity, but none of the employees really saw any of that change.
Right.
Right. It was a slogan more than anything. There was a slogan without the action. And so when we talk about intentional, you're changing that behavior. The employees are seeing that when they say something, they feel safe to say something. And when they do, they're seeing adjustments in the culture.
So that's how employees could tell the difference is if it's just, I mean, same thing with core values, any really new behavior expectations. It's one thing to say it, but until they see the difference, until they see the change happening, it's just words, right?
Yes. And it has to, they have to feel and see safety in speaking up, and they have to see accountability for what the company has stated at every level. So it can't just be applied to the lower levels. The higher levels, the executives, the leaders have to also follow those statements, those policies, because we see that a lot where this is for you, but we're going to behave poorly up here, right?
That's the tough part. And because there's not really oversight at that level, especially if it's not a public, you know, company with a, right. you know, without a board or, so again, back to that leader really being aware and being bought in to the change themselves.
Yes. And, you know, for me, it's within my department. I always make sure I have diverse teams, and diversity of thought. I try and create very safe environments where people feel they trust me and the other people on our team so that they can dispute something, they can present something and not feel concerned about backlash. So it does start with each leader. And then certainly the CEO, you know, I've had some great CEOs who know how to do that really well and make you feel comfortable and respected. And like the company I'm in and the last company I was at. So there are leaders out there. I mean,
right.
Most of my career, I've had great leaders. There's been a couple of bad apples, but most of them have been fantastic. And some of them don't recognize their bias, but when you address it, they understand and they try and do better. Right.
Yes. Yeah. And you've even, you know, written candidly about just the exhaustion of navigating bias over, you know, your decades in tech. So are there any practices or mindsets that have helped you going and still, you know, thriving in your roles today?
Yes, I do. You know, I love my profession still. I didn't leave my profession. There were times where I wanted to, for sure. I'm very passionate about tech. I'm passionate about marketing. I think the best strategy is to recognize it for what it is, its bias, and understand that there are strategies, and I lay a lot of them out in the book. There's strategies to maneuver around over some of these barriers, and you can still have a successful career. To have a career that you really enjoy, you do have to address the bias though, right? Because that's mm-hmm. going to make you feel more credible in these rooms and have more visibility in these rooms and feel good about yourself that you are addressing and you're trying to change some of the behavior. So you do have to name it and then address it. And in the book, I give you the way to understand what some of these biases are and how they show up. And then what I give you the language to say to address them. And so those are the things you need to do.
That's so helpful that you actually give the how-to. Would you be willing to share one kind of how-to or some of the language that you have in the book?
So one of them is, which is not uncommon, where people speak over you in a meeting. And so I think that easiest way to do that is if someone starts to speak over you, you say, John, say their name. John, I'm going to finish my thought here, and then I'd love to hear your thought or your perspective, and then immediately continue to speak talking. Just continue with what you're saying. So that's one thing. And it seems simple, but it can feel uncomfortable too. And don't ask permission, you know, let me speak or, you know, I'm sorry, we apologize. I'm sorry, but let me finish. Kamala Harris is famous for I'm speaking and puts her hands up. That's fine to do that as well. But it might not feel as comfortable, but to just give them the name, kind of put your, you know, I'm going to finish what I'm saying and love to hear your perspective after, or your love to hear your idea after. So that's one thing. There's something about repeating, which is when you say an idea, and we talked about this earlier, you say an idea, you get no traction. And then the guy next to you says the same thing. And I've had this happen a lot in meetings.
Me too.
And everyone's like, oh, wow, that's amazing, John. And so that's called repeating. And the way to address it, which I thought was interesting, it came from President Obama's, some women on his staff, because it was happening to them. And it's called amplification. So when you give an idea, tell a story around that idea. Don't just state the idea. Mm. I think we should do quarterly business reviews with our customers. I think we should do quarterly business reviews with our customers because that will help us understand if our product is helping them meet their goal. We'll understand where they have some barriers and we can help them out, et cetera, et cetera. So give it some strength. And you don't have to have numbers and data because you're in these rooms and you guys are all chatting.
Right.
But you had the idea for a reason. State that reason with the idea. It's harder for somebody to steal the credibility. To take credit for that idea if you give it a little bit more life.
That is, I mean, it seems so simple, but you're absolutely right because they can't take that away from you, right? If you give the reason, or if you even share one of your own, like, I think we should do these quarterly business reviews because when I talk to my client, Costco, right. You know, they express that they do this with other vendors, da, 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 then you're owning that because right. It's, you know, you've tied yourself to that idea. Yes. I love that.
And it shifts the conversation towards you. People start to then riff off of that idea.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's staying with you.
Yeah.
And I had someone say to me, oh, I never thought of that. I just left it alone. Well, these are the things that are subtle, they're happening. And if you don't address them, you're being devalued in that room by that. And it's affecting your career, whether you believe it or not, because what happens is when it comes time for promotion, they're looking at who always has these great ideas. Well, John just took credit for 5 of your ideas in the last quarter. So John's getting the promotion.
Right.
Not Wendy.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
So yeah. Powerful. So, I mean, simple, but so helpful and powerful. And I can see the impact that those could make. Mm-hmm. So, tell me, I mean, we've talked a lot about some of the negative side, but what gives you hope for women and underrepresented groups in tech today or in corporate?
The last company I worked at, I told you that I gave you the example of how there were equal women and men in the room and it broke down the bias and we had this respectful relationships with each other. We felt valued. That gave me so much hope. Really. I mean, it's possible,
mm-hmm.
Right? That showed me the possibility. The other thing is I see a lot of women and younger generation of men sticking up for each other in these rooms. A lot of times they do it outside of the rooms. We need to do it more in the room, but they're sticking up for each other. They're not tolerating this behavior or they're addressing it in a professional way. So that certainly gives me hope. And again, when I started out, there were very few women in tech. There was a lot of sexual harassment. It was a daily event. That has subsided quite a bit, thankfully. Not that it still doesn't happen, but not as frequently as you know, when I was coming up in my career. So all those things give me hope.
Awesome. And if there was one thing that you could, you know, share with a CEO or HR leader, even a team manager, to really creating a more intentional culture, what's one small step that they could take?
Awareness is always the first thing. So audit the everyday. Mm. Who's being influenced? Who's the influencer? Who's getting promoted? Who gets to lead? Who gets those stretch projects? Take a look at the everyday. Audit that. And if you don't have a great, if it doesn't show up, if the results aren't good as far as inclusivity, then make those changes.
Yeah, I love it. So where can people find you? Where can they find your book? How can they connect with you?
It's on Amazon and Goodreads and Barnes & Noble for sure. But awesome. If you go to kwilliams.com, and that's kaewilliams.com, you will find links there to purchase the book and also links to my social media channels to follow me because I do give a lot of advice on some of the social media channels that I'm on.
Where do you mostly spend your time in social media? What platform?
LinkedIn.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. LinkedIn mostly for my audience. Instagram as well.
Yeah, me too. Well, Kay, this has been a great conversation. I'm so appreciative of your time and just what you're out here, spreading with your book and your message. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Wendy. I enjoyed the conversation and I appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation with you today.
Of course. Thank you. What a great episode. I am so grateful for Kay and such an honest, insightful, and deeply validating conversation. For everyone listening, if you felt seen in this episode, please go pick up Kay's book, Not Made for You Now. You can find it, as she said, Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, Goodreads, or directly through her website at kaywilliams, that's K-A-E, williams.com. And be sure to follow her on LinkedIn and Instagram. Her practical strategies and scripts are game changers. I'm also obviously going to put the links in the show notes so you can go grab them there. If this episode sparks something for you, share it with another woman in leadership or a manager who's committed to building a more inclusive and intentional culture. Conversations like this are just, it's how change begins. And if you're ready to build a culture where your people just aren't just showing up, but they're truly thriving, I hope you'll come join me at culturecoachwendy.com. Thank you for listening. Have a happy Thanksgiving if you're listening to this on the day of release. And if you're just coming back from the holidays when you listen to this, I hope you enjoyed some good family time, time with friends, and some downtime. Talk to you next week.